Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. This week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be talking with Carrie Baker. She is the Senior Account Executive for Norton Financial Services, and she is going to be talking about the Affordable Care Act. Carrie, thank you for being back on the show.
I'm happy to be back. Thanks for asking.
You know, last time we talked a lot about the Affordable Care Act, and that was only, a couple months ago, and you'd given a number of updates of what's happening. Is there anything new that we should just go over quickly before we talk about how the broker rolls and so forth with this Affordable Care Act?
I don't know that any of the new regulations have brought forth anything new, but they are making sense of the law, which is hard to do. And right now, the broker role has become increasingly labor intense, I would say. In order to do the right thing for our clients, it's imperative that we start right this minute helping them prepare for some of the things that are going to come into full force January 1st of 2014. And some of those things are understanding whether or not they're going to be subject to the law, meaning do they have 50 full-time employees? Because that's the magic number, 50 full-time employees being 30-hour-a-week employees.
And I think that's an important statement, is that in the past, many companies have 32, 35, 37, 40 hours as being full-time.
Right.
But according to the Affordable Care Act, it is now 30 hours. That affects
Effective January 1st,
2014.
Correct.
So that's a big deal. That's a big change.
It is a big change. And I think that the misnomer was that, you know, on January 1st, if you had, you know, everybody was kind of preparing that 30-hour employee would now be benefit eligible for health benefits. And what they didn't really know when I spoke to you before, it was just coming into existence, but it was the idea that the employee has a look-back period. So it isn't just what's effective January 1st. An employer has to look at their employee base and determine whether some of those employees that are currently employed, underemployed, that are not benefit eligible, they have to determine whether or not they will factor in January 1st. And it's called a look-back period, and it's wreaking some havoc for some small employers that didn't think they would be subject to the penalties.
So let's talk about look back for just a second so we get some clarification on this.
Yeah.
So a look back period is, let's use some dates so it makes it simple. January 1st, 2014, the law goes into place.
Correct.
And that's when everything starts.
Right.
So look back period is the point of time that affects the decisions having to be made on January 1st, 2014?
It will determine whether or not the employer is going to be subject to this law, meaning are they a 50-plus employer or are they a 49 and less full-time employees employer?
And what is the time frame for that look-back period? How many months? How many weeks?
Well, what it is, it's starting now. As of January 1st, 2013, what they do or how they look at things, it's going to come into play. And what the law says is that an employer who might have part-time employees, that's the big piece of this. Part of the equation, it's not just a full-time employee working 30 hours, but now they have to determine if they have part-time employees that might become part of the equation. It's called a part-time equivalency that would determine whether the number of hours part-time employees work would generate the equivalency of a full-time employee.
Okay.
So let me give you a scenario. I'm an employer with 48 employees, and I'm thinking I'm good. I'm not going to be subject to this law, the penalties. So I'm not going to worry about it. But now I've just found out that I have my part-time employees might come into play. Well, I have 10 part-time employees, each working 10 hours a week. Okay. That if you multiply that times four, that's 400 hours of part-time pay I'm doling out on a monthly basis.
400, yes.
So 400 hours of part-time pay, divide it by 120, and you get 3.3. That's 3.3 equivalent full-time equivalents. So I have 48 full-time, 30 hours a week eligibles for January 1st. I know that. Well, now I have 51. So you know what? I am subject to this law. I am going to have to comply with the law.
What we're saying is the number of part-time people you have, you have to add up the total number of hours they work on average.
Yes.
And that goes to some formula that has been set up in the law.
Yeah.
120 hours divided by that.
Yeah.
And you get a number. And you have to add it to the full-time hours.
Yes. So I went from, in January, having 48 employees, but actually technically, because of the law, I really have 51 benefit-eligible employees. But to complicate things, those part-time employees, they're not, what it means is they don't get benefits because they still work under 30 hours. They're just going to play the role, they're going to force this employer to be subject to penalties. The other piece of this is in this look-back period, and I said it's beginning now, we're in 2013, and employers didn't realize that what they were doing now was going to
have an effect in
2014. But the look-back period, at least they give them some leeway. They're going to allow employers to look back in six-month segments. So they can choose six consecutive months of, you know, during the course of the year prior to 2014 or prior to their renewal, and choose the 6 months that would best serve them. Because some employers are going to have really heavy part-time, not necessarily seasonal workers, but, you know,
ramp up time for projects.
Yes, exactly.
And different things. Okay.
Yeah, so at least it gives them some leeway, but they have to choose six consecutive months prior to January 1st, basically.
Okay. So just as a point of reference, and then we'll get back to that, does seasonal employment affect this?
It does not. It does not. There's an out, but if you have seasonal employees that work consecutively more than 120 days out of the year, then they become part-time employees. So there is a formula. And the IRS, one of the better guidelines that I've seen that's out there for the world to go to is a frequently asked question, or it's called IRS Shared Responsibility Document. It's a very good document. We are, at Norton is actually, you know, part of our role right now, we are immersed in providing every single one of our clients what we call an ACA audit or checklist. So we have that. It is separated out. Small employers, because they need to know what's going on for them as well, and large employers. And the large employers, well, there are two kinds of employers that we're most concerned about. Those that are on that cusp, the 48-hour employer that may end up ultimately be subject to the law, but they really didn't understand it or know that. And so it's our job right now to educate them. We have a 21-page audit that we go through so that they, and it's a checklist and there's some action items, and it's been very, very helpful to them. I think it has allayed some of their fears, but it also provides them some leeway to start really preparing for all of it. And that, and the part-time equivalency is just one piece of it. Some of our employers in Maine have been for years now providing health reimbursement arrangements to their employees to help offset deductibles.
Sure.
Right. Out-of-pocket expenses. Sure. And, you know, this is the first year, I think, that if an employer is fully insured or self-insured, it doesn't matter, but they have an HRA in place, a health reimbursement arrangement, they have to file a form W-720, I believe it is, before the end of July. There's a cost to that. There's a fee associated. And these are the kinds of things we're making sure we're going through with our clients to ensure that they understand what pieces of the puzzle they are going to have, that they might have an action item that's going to take effect. It could be any time. One of the things that has been postponed that was going to be an action item for March 1st was that the employers were going to be responsible for providing every one of their benefit-eligible employees a notice of the exchange. It was going to be provided by the Health and Human Services Department. And that is the one action item that was due March 1st that has been postponed. So, you know, we're going through updating them almost on a weekly basis. Even if we've done an audit in the last 2 weeks, our information has been updated about every week to every 2 weeks. And so we have to then forward that information you know, and help.
So the regulations constantly are changing, correct?
They're constantly
you're just having
changing.
Constantly the information. And
yes.
Any business that's out there, mm-hmm. any professional that's looking at this, mm-hmm. will not have the time to keep up with this. I mean, that's just the reality of this, which is why we're talking about the broker role.
The broker role is, we are becoming the first line of help. it's become very consultative and very time-consuming, not only for the employer but for the broker. It is, for much of what we do outside of the world of health insurance, which is plenty, there are a lot of other benefits that we need to, you know, continually service and provide information and updates and so forth. But all of our time, I would say that most of us are probably, we've reallocated all of our time to healthcare.
Well, you know, most of a broker's role is they come in, you see them maybe once a year, you might get a call sometime later, and 6 months later, or hello, or right before the renewal, with a month or so before, and you may not see the broker or talk to the broker, you might get some updates or so forth. This really changes the role completely, doesn't it?
It really does, and if you have a broker that is continuing along that vein, you need to find another broker. you really need to have somebody that you can depend on and trust to be keeping you updated, because the regulations are coming out fast and furiously. And the other thing I'm going to say about the regulations, it's very interesting because we spend all this time educating. And quite frankly, much of the regulations that are written, they say they're proposed. So even on Friday, when many of the leftover questions were put to rest through the final kind of a big set of regulations and where they were defined, they still say the proposed regulations, and that's partly because in May, I believe, there's still a chance that we can affect any change to any of these regulations that aren't making any sense, and some of them don't make sense. One being, I think, in my opinion, after having tried to negotiate going through it yesterday, was the AV calculator, the actuarial calculator that's going to determine whether a large employer – whether the plan design that they offer is meeting the requirement of covering at least 60% of the overall health plan benefit to the employer. The employee is not to be on the hook for more than 40%. But instead of, you know, providing a calculator, it's all online. It's an electronic calculator.
I'm sure,
it's not a
simple tool, correct?
Right.
It's supposed to be.
It's breathtakingly
cumbersome?
Yes, and confusing. Extremely confusing.
Ineffective?
Yeah, ineffective. The average employer is not going to be able to go into the calculator and translate their plan designs into what is provided to them. I mean, from verbiage on down, and I'm in the business, it's all I do. I gave up after about an hour and 15 minutes because I realized how labor intense it would be and that it would require a lot more time on my part, it really did take my breath away. And there have been other example calculators out there that weren't as extensive as this one, or, you know, this is the definitive one. And the other interesting part, I was given a notice that it was available on the HHS site and the Department of Labor.
I was going to ask who put this out.
Do you know how hard it took me forever? I found it. I finally found it on the Department of Health and Services site and Human Services site. And then once I found it, it went away. I swear it went away. So I think they took it down for a bit to do some kind of tweaking, put it back up. But it took me forever to find it again. And I had gone through so many steps. You know, you should be able to put AV calculator, because a lot of folks have been waiting for this thing. And our employers, really, that are large employers, meaning 50-plus employees, are basing much of what they offer to their employees on this thing. And it's very, very difficult to use. That's my humble opinion as a broker who's been doing this for a long time.
You are listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Hi, this is Peter Boldick at Harvest Hill Farms. For those folks who are looking for healthy eating alternatives, we have been raising natural range-fed beef and poultry right here in the great state of Maine for over 15 years. Let us introduce you to our Never Ever program. Our animals are never ever introduced to growth hormones or antibiotics, only raised as nature intended. We are conveniently located on Route 26 in Mechanic Falls. To find out more, call us at 998-5485 or go to our website, harvesthillfarms.com. That's harvesthillfarms.com.
I love Maine, and I'm interested in Maine news.
But I want it quickly and simply.
All in one place would be good.
You've just described a great website.
Really?
MaineNewsSimply.com.
Maine news.
Three words. MaineNewsSimply.com. Go to the site and I'll explain. MaineNewsSimply.com collects news as it happens from news sources all over Maine. It's compiled and presented online in an easy-to-read format that keeps you up to date in just minutes. MaineNewsSimply.com is for people on the go who want the news of Maine fast, anywhere, anytime.
I'm on, and you're right. This is exactly what I asked for.
Discover what thousands of Mainers already have. Maine News Simply, the free online website and daily newsletter loaded with headlines and stories from close to 50 news sources.
Maine News Simply looks great, easy to read, current, interesting. I like it.
Try it today, and while you're there, sign up for the newsletter. It's all free. Three words, MaineNewsSimply.com. The smarter, faster way to stay on top of the news in Maine.
Well, I think one of the things we're talking about is, you know, there are so many changes happening. Mm-hmm. There are so many regulations mm-hmm. just coming down the pike, and they're coming fast and furious.
Yeah.
And I think when you look at that, and then you have this calculator that pops up, and it's cumbersome. This really makes the broker's role with the organization, as you said, far more consultative to try to help them go through the minefield.
Because
if you're going to make decisions mm-hmm. that affect company profitabilities,
yeah.
affect hiring,
yes.
affect levels of training, development, and just simple, you know, capital,
correct.
This is all part of what they need to know.
It is. And, you know, interestingly, right now, most of the brokers in the fully insured world are receiving compensation that's built into the plan designs. You know, the interesting piece of this puzzle is we're working very, very hard for all of our clients, small groups, large groups. And there's an inevitability out there that potentially in 2014, a lot of our revenue from small groups may completely vanish. And I know that for the broker community out there, much of the way in which they're going to be compensated is going to be now no longer attached to the what's already built in to medical premiums. And I know that sometimes is not a popular conversation, but what we bring to the table is quality work, and we really do help to keep rates down at the end of the day if we're doing our job and negotiating rates. But soon we're going to be transferring a lot of what we're doing now free. You're going to see it evolve into consultative fees down the road, and that's really the way of the world, and that's really where it's going, at least when it comes to health insurance. And so where this is going to hurt, I think, is that the small group market. These guys are not, you know, the employers that are in the 49 and under market. Many of them want to actually continue, if they can, to offer benefits because it still gives them that leg up in attracting and retaining great employees.
Oh,
right? You
absolutely.
Know that very well.
It's critical.
Correct.
It's critical.
So for those folks out there that are going to try to do that and continue to offer a nice benefit package to their employees, they're still going to need, you know, the broker help. And it'll be an interesting world in a few years.
So let me ask a quick question. The carriers,
mm-hmm.
and Anthem,
yeah.
And all the others,
Cigna, all the big ones
out there, are they helping the brokerage community? Are they helping organizations? What is their role in this?
They really are. Each one of them are providing us regulatory updates as well. I know that they're the insurance carriers, and often construed as the bad guys. But you know, in the course of time that I've been in this business, they've also helped in some instance, regulate, well, the redundancies in the high-tech radiology, which is interesting what part of this law is going to be implementing all of those things. There are going to be some changes to the kinds of testing we're going to get, and so forth and so on. Well,
sure.
The insurance companies, the private carriers, have been doing that for years, but they've been demonized for doing it.
Right.
I think that's interesting. But they have definitely, I mean, they have a stake in this, too. My biggest concern about the carrier market is how they're going to interact with the federal exchange. Maine is a state that has deferred to the federal exchange when it comes time for that to be implemented. And there has not been any real information coming out of Washington, D.C. or at a state level as to exactly what we might have access to. You know, what kinds of rates are we talking about? They have been shaping the what are called the essential benefits. And whether you have a state exchange or whether you are going to be utilizing the federal exchange when it's up and running, there are going to be very clear benefits that have to be included. And so I think for many of us, whether it's in Maine or any of those other states that are going to defer to any exchange, we are waiting with anticipation to see, you know, what exactly are these plan designs going to look like. We know that there are some parameters that might not be that affordable for us for in many states, and I'm not going to go into that because there has been some regulatory easing of certain
sure,
of the essential
sure.
benefits. But the main thing is we really, the employers and the consumers really need to know as quickly as possible what it really is going to mean. What is that exchange going to look like? What are the rates going to be for my family, for myself? And for those employers who are going to say, you know, I'd rather increase salaries, or I would rather not deal with this mess anymore. If they're a large group, we do have some large groups that are actually entertaining paying the penalties because the penalties are far less than what the actual cost.
Yeah, we talked about this last time.
Correct.
That's a real
right.
possibility.
Right. And so, you know, the problem with the big piece of this puzzle is we're finally sort of understanding what the criteria is for large group, for small group, for large employers, and what they have to do. And there's some that could be a 2-hour conversation in itself. But the big question mark is the alternative for all of those employers and all of the consumers that are waiting for the exchange products and having some inkling of what they're going, what does it mean to me? You know,
okay.
I think the general public thinks they're going to be the answer to everything. Oh my gosh, I'm going to get this affordable health care through these exchanges because yay, you know, a couple of the plans are going to be backed by the federal government. Well, right now, even the CBO has said that they're going to be probably more costly than any group plan that you can get out there. And that's disheartening.
And that's certainly not what we thought would happen, right?
Part of that has to do, I'm just going to say it has to do with the pre-existing the lift of pre-existing limitations. And I know that's not a fun thing to talk about. But again, the pre-existing limitation piece is really putting a big zinger into the fray. The insurance companies, you know, need to be able to, you know, actuarially figure out what we're talking about. You know, they can't just offer something at a rate that is going to tank them in a year or two. So when people say, well, gosh, you know, it's the right thing to do. We shouldn't have pre-existing condition limitations. And I get it. I do. But to speak in layman's terms, and this is what I say to some of my clients who try to understand why it's hard for an insurer to grapple around this. First of all, when we're talking about health insurance, people's, you know, we're talking about things that could cost, you know, if we go in for quadruple bypass, we're talking $50,000-$60,000 there. If we talk about a neonatal situation where we have a preemie born, we're talking at least $1 million claim. Now, we liken it to auto insurance, okay? We're talking about those kinds of huge potential risks, claims, right? The dollars are,
sure.
could be unlimited.
Absolutely.
And yet, in the auto insurance world, you know, yeah, some of you might drive a Hummer or some kind of Maserati or something that's expensive, but there's still a finite cost to the actual
right.
automobile.
Right.
You know,
even the liability side is
even
capped.
The liability is capped.
Right.
Okay, so having said this, I liken it to this. And, you know, in the individual market, pretty soon we're going to be able to purchase insurance whenever you want to because there's no pre-existing condition limitation. So if I have to go in to the hospital and I'm uninsured because I paid $95, that's the fine is less, and I go to the hospital, I could potentially right now pick up the phone, have my loved ones call and get a policy for me. Now, they haven't written the specific regs about the you know, all of that would entail. But can you imagine? And then after I'm well, I could technically dump my policy. These are the kinds of things that make it very difficult for the insurance, including our federal government, to put a dollar figure on this. And the employer market needs to know what the alternative is to their employer market products, insurance products.
You know, Carrie, this conversation, I'd love to continue throughout the year and have you back on. And I know you're certainly willing to, and I'm glad you are, because I think as these regulations come out and as the rules change, I think this is critical information that needs to be get out to everyone that's out there. And so, first of all, I want to thank you for being on the show today.
Me.
You know, a half hour is never enough time. We know that. But I think it's a great segment, and I appreciate all your information. If somebody wants to reach you at Norton, they can.
They can. We have the Norton website, which provides all of the numbers and everything at www.nortonne.com.
Absolutely. And of course, people can go to the hrpowerhour.com and they can click right there and your information will be there right after the show. Thank you so much. You are listening to the HR Power Hour and we will be right back.
Fram filters can take a beating. At the Fram Proving Grounds, they get the pound test, where they're hit with 100 psi of pressure every second for 30,000 seconds. This leads to tough, tested Fram filters, like Fram ExtraGuard, built to protect three times better than average economy filters. Don't settle for a cheaper filter. Use Fram ExtraGuard. Tested, proven, and pounded into shape at the Fram Proving Grounds. Fram, don't fail your engine. See us hit our filters with more tests at Fram.com.
Are you in sales, or do you own your own business? If so, I want you to think of a number. Think of the amount of money you'd like to make this year. Do you have it? Okay, so what's stopping you? It's not your drive. It's not your skills. Chances are, it's your ability to find new leads. It's not easy. But what if, with one phone call, you could actually get your hands on as many new sales leads as you could handle, and actually make that number you have in your head? It's not too good to be true. It's Sales Genie from Info Group, America's leading provider of sales leads, plus money-making email and direct mail solutions. No matter what you're selling or who you're selling to, Sales Genie has the sales leads you need. And right now, they'll give you a free trial just for calling. Call Sales Genie at 1-800-991-8440 and get your free trial. Call 1-800-991-8440. 1-800-991-8440. Again, that's 1-800-991-8440.
When I'm shopping for a new car, I want the real story. Like, what do real people who own the car think of it? And I want to know what I should pay so I can get the best deal. Is that too much to ask?
We don't think so. Kelley Blue Book's KBB.com will help you find out what you should pay for a new car. Use KBB.com's advanced car valuation tools, plus get reviews from both real car owners and certified experts. At KBB.com, you get the real story. So don't shop for a new car until you've gone to KBB.com, the trusted resource.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Packers.
Vikings.
We come from different places.
Uptown.
Downtown.
We come to different conclusions.
Half empty.
Half full.
But when we live united, we make a real difference in the building blocks of life. Children succeed in school, families gain financial stability, the health of our neighbors improves, and suddenly so do our communities. Real change won't happen without you.
Live united.
So give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Sign up today at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
We're talking with Jim Balmer. He is the director of the Maine Business Leadership Network, or BLN, up in Augusta, Maine. Jim, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, David.
So tell me a little bit about what the Maine Business Leadership Network is.
Well, Maine Business Leadership Network, we're an affiliate of a national organization called the U.S. BLN, or Business Leadership Network. Our primary focus is on helping individuals with disabilities or people with disabilities access employment. The data on people with disabilities is pretty dire, meaning that if 79% of the working age population are employed, only 35% of that population with disabilities in Maine is working. So we're trying to raise that number and encourage businesses to look at enhancing their diversity and inclusion practices.
What are some of the challenges that make the number so low? Is it employers? First, is it misinformation? Is it that there are challenges with the skill set of the employee in terms of they may have been working in a factory or may have been working on the line and now can no longer do something based on their, you know, disability, and then thus they have to be retrained? Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I think that there are probably components of both. I think that there's a lot of misinformation about what's entailed with hiring somebody with a disability. The disability spectrum is broad. It's all-encompassing. There are so many different factors. I mean, there are very apparent disabilities that you can look at someone and know that they have, you know, a disability. Then you have non-apparent disabilities, which you or I wouldn't know unless that individual discloses that. So,
and certainly when you're hiring somebody, it is prudent for the candidate to either make that disclosure if necessary or not. So does that also factor into the challenge with hiring them?
I think that it does. What our goal is to try to help employers understand that there's a real benefit to looking at this targeted population. As you know, David, Maine has a challenge, like many states, with an aging population. At some point, we're going to run out of people to fill our vacant positions. We may even be there. So looking at targeted populations and trying to really bring them on board, recognizing them as a talent pool, I think is really important.
How does that affect a company's bottom line? Do they have to spend a lot more to hire somebody with a disability? You know, there's a lot of questions having to do with the American Disabilities Act and some of the rules and regulations that say you have to do this or that. Kind of talk about that a little.
Well, I mean, there is proposed federal legislation to mandate, a certain percentage. I would prefer that companies make that decision on their own. The short answer is there is an advantage to hiring someone with a disability. There are tax incentives. There are other supports. It actually is a good choice, and it helps a company's bottom line from a business perspective. Retention data shows that people with disabilities are more loyal. And also, this is the third largest market segment in the country. So a company that hires people with disabilities, I think, is also enhancing its image and tapping into a trillion-dollar market of people that want to support what it is that they're doing as a business.
In terms of the education piece to the employer, I know you're working with the Chamber, and certainly the Chamber of Commerce is all over the state. And so tell me a little bit about, how that partnership has evolved and how they're helping your organization, the BLN.
Sure. The whole BLN concept goes back about 15 years when the U.S. Chamber of Commerce had a very active role with the Office of Disability Employment Policy of launching the U.S. BLN. And so by and large, out of the 50 plus affiliates of the BLN across the country, most of them have a strong affiliation with either their local or state Chamber of Commerce. In our case, our primary affiliate partner is the Maine State Chamber of Commerce. So they're providing some administrative support, some marketing support. The great thing, as you know, with the Maine State Chamber of Commerce is if I went out there maybe on my own, people not knowing exactly who we were, we may not have as many doors open to us as going in and saying, hey, we're affiliated with the Maine State Chamber of Commerce. And people are willing to listen. It's also, I think, a part of their overall workforce development strategy of trying to enhance opportunities for all Maine people and promoting a strong economy.
No, I think this is important. I think it's a segment of the population that is viable, usable, And absolutely is a segment that we want to help employers learn why it can be valuable for them. You know, one of the things that I know you're doing is having a business-to-business approach on this. And you kind of talked about that off the air with me, and so I'd like you kind of to share that with the audience.
Well, I think that businesses know best on, you know, what works and what doesn't work. So the peer-to-peer approach, we have a lead employer. So every BLN affiliate has a lead employer. Ours is Procter & Gamble, Tambrands, and Auburn, who have done some amazing work with the launching of their Flexi Center. Right now they have, I think, just around 60 people, and the employment rate of people with disabilities in that Flexi Center, which is a custom pack center, is around, I think it's like 40%. And so I guess what we're doing is taking that model, which is modeled on Walgreens' very successful model, and saying these are some practices that have worked, not just in Maine, but across the country. And I think those conversations that develop with employers have an opportunity to talk openly with each other. They share their challenges. They can even share maybe some of the fears that they have about making this step. But the businesses in Maine that are doing hiring, like Procter & Gamble, like L.L. Bean, like Unum, like many other businesses, we're trying to, I guess, have a more intentional partnership. And so that's part of the membership piece, and really trying to help support other businesses of taking that next step, whatever that might be. It might be hiring their first person with a disability, or maybe they have five or six and it's hiring, you know, another three or four, and kind of encouraging that, you know, taking that next step, whatever that might be.
You mentioned the Walgreens model. I'm not sure everybody knows the Walgreens model. So could you kind of quickly go over their success and what that model was, and why it's a national model to look at?
I think Walgreens has been phenomenal in what they've been able to do. And primarily it came out of their VP for logistics and supply chain, Randy Lewis, who has an autistic son. And Randy just basically went to other managers and said, could we do more? I mean, they were already there hiring people with disabilities and looking at launching a brand new distribution center at the time. I think it was in Anderson, South Carolina. They looked at doing, you know, universal design, all on one level, and unbeknownst to them, when they sort of took this next step, it became their most productive distribution center. And then when they built their new distribution center down in Windsor, Connecticut, same thing. That percentage, I think it's 800 people working there, 400 people with disabilities. It's their leading distribution center for performance across the country. So what they found is not only they've supported this model, but it's really made sense from bottom line perspective. And they've found out some things around safety and other alterations in their process, primarily because they took this step. But that was sort of that commitment that started with Randy Lewis.
The Maine BLN, you've been in existence for a little while now, and you're the new director, correct, as
yes.
of August of
That's
2012,
correct.
So congratulations on that.
Well, thank you.
I'm sure you've said to yourself, this is going to be a rewarding position, correct? I mean, to me, I would think that being able to help people with disabilities and get this message out there must be a rewarding for you.
Well, I think any opportunity that you have to make a difference in people's lives is rewarding. It's certainly a challenge. We're brand new, trying to get off the ground, trying to get our name out there. But yeah, I'm excited. I mean, my background's workforce development, and I think this is sort of that next step forward for me. We're excited and really looking to connect with Maine's businesses.
Tell me what the goals are of the BLN.
Two goals this year. Part of it is sustainability. As a new affiliate, we've been relying on grant money. Now we're making that transition to private sector funding and building up our membership. So we have a goal of trying to get to 50 members by the 1st of October.
Well, that's a huge membership increase, correct?
Yes.
And so how's the goal coming, by the way?
We're getting there. I think what we're going to see is a real push over the next couple of months as we move towards the Maine HR convention in May to really connect with Maine's employers. So we're looking to build a partnership with the Maine State Council of Sherem. and the Diversity Hiring Coalition as statewide partners, because as you know, that's a great group of people to connect with.
And no, the Maine HR Convention is a great conference, and certainly New England Law Publishers, MaineHR.com, yes, is a great sponsor of this show. So we could, yeah, we absolutely think that it's wonderful, but not only for the sponsorship, but the fact that they are able to connect 800 of the New England group's top HR people together. And you have a lot of great talent there that can just connect with, and you don't usually get to see them all in one place.
No.
You know, it's 4 days. It's a great conference. So, no, I absolutely agree. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour.
Maine DOT has a special announcement for northbound drivers who routinely take I-295's Exit 15 in Yarmouth. Stop taking Exit 15. I repeat, stop taking Exit 15. It's not your exit anymore. It was your exit once, but not now. Forget about northbound Exit 15. Exit 15 is not for you. Actually, Maine DOT is adding a brand new on-ramp there, and to do that safely and quickly, closing Exit 15 is required starting March 12th. So if you're driving northbound on Interstate 295 and headed for Route 1 in Yarmouth, take Exit 10 in Falmouth or Exit 17. Temporary traffic signals will make taking those alternate exits safe and convenient. You can take Exit 15 southbound, but just forget all about Exit 15 northbound, at least until June. Sometime in June, you can take Exit 15 then. Take it all you want. Exit 15 will be yours once again. A message from Maine DOT. There's better road ahead. Drive safely.
I'm in a state of caffeination, got all my fingers shaking, must have been my large Americano, mochaccino, macchiato. Now the family's gone to bed, and that's my favorite time to get some tips on better rates. Cause my State Farm guy answers late, and even when it's not my agent, someone's standing by so patient. Getting coverage questions answered helps me to relax. Get to a better state, State Farm.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Most days go by without a whole lot of surprises. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? Would you be prepared? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And we're talking with Jim Baumer. How are you?
I'm very well, David. Thank
good.
You.
And so for all those listening, he is the director of the Maine Business Leadership Network, and we're talking about disabilities in the workplace and getting employers to hire more individuals, which is just an important step in helping the overall economy of Maine, actually yes, the overall economy across the country. What is the biggest obstacles you think companies face in hiring people with disabilities?
I just think right now it's some of it's a lack of information. I think some of it's the fear that employers have. So here's an example. Some employers are fearful that if they hire a person with a disability, they'd have to make all of these accommodations. The reality is that if accommodations are made, the average accommodation is less than $500. But in fact, most reasonable accommodations don't cost a dime. There are very simple things that can be done. There are a lot of great resources. There's a job accommodation network nationally that will come in, will do an assessment, and we can certainly work with employers and help connect them to those kinds of resources and figure out what would work for them. And that's kind of what one of our goals is to connect with employers and help provide that information for them. So we are sort of that one stop for them.
And if somebody wants to reach out to you, what is the website that they can?
Our website is mainbln.org. They can email me, director@mainbln.org, or they can call me at area code, of course, 207-215-1492.
You know, one of the things we hear a lot about is the skills gap that's happening out there and companies struggling to find great employees. Gosh knows that, you know, we hear this all the time from every level. How do you think that this work that you're doing with the BLN can help address some of those workforce issues?
I think that the people with disabilities in this state and everywhere represent a tremendous pool of talent. It's an obvious underutilized pool. So being able to connect, recognizing the skills, and finding those particular skills that employers might have to meet those needs.
Are there specific industries that you're seeing that fit right into the niche of hiring disabilities? Or is it really across the board?
I think it's across the board. I mean, I think it would be... normal to look at our success here in Maine with Procter & Gamble and Tambrands in Auburn. They're manufacturing. There's some component of distribution there and say, well, that's the sector. But if you look at nationally, the U.S. BLN, they represent over 5,000 companies nationally. And they are across the board. You've got transportation with Southwest Airlines and CSX. You've got Microsoft. You've got Walmart. You've got Lowe's. You've got small disability-owned entrepreneurial businesses. So I guess the simple answer would be it really depends on what the skills are that the business needs because people with disabilities are just like everybody else. People have specific skills and talents, and it's plugging those skills and talents into the particular need that you have as a business.
As we look at the costs that an employer has to face, because the reality is, if we're talking about a small employer, for example, they may have five or six people. That could be 20% of their workforce, someone who may have a disability. What are some of the averages, maybe you may know, that an employer may have to look at from a cost perspective? And from, remember, everything is cost-benefit analysis, right? I mean, let's be honest with, that's when we're hiring anyone, when we're doing anything. Employers and HR professionals are looking at, what is my cost-benefit analysis for this? So is there any data that you have or anything that you could say, hey, this makes sense, especially when...
Yeah, well, I mean, there is a lot of information out there. Studies have been done from the Department of Labor. Walgreens has done a study on retention. Procter & Gamble and Auburn have seen a tremendous advantage of hiring people with disabilities from the retention side. So just looking at retention, if that population tends to be more loyal and stays longer, you know, the cost of turnover is high. I know that looking at, for instance, you know, contingent workforce and staffing, they've had a lot of companies have issues with turnover. What Procter & Gamble has found is this has really been advantageous for them in their Flexi Center, and the same thing with Walgreens. So I think if you look nationally, companies have had a lot of success with the retention side, hiring people with disabilities, and the data certainly points to that.
Well, you know, I think this is an area that maybe isn't talked a lot about, and it's something that really is under the radar of a lot of organizations, companies, and, you know, certainly when we talk to employers, very rarely do they ever talk about this area. And yet I think it is certainly a need and could potentially solve a number of hiring problems that are out there. And so how do you think that you're going to continue to get that message out? How do you align with the national organization, especially, to coordinate that message?
Well, I think looking at what USBLN is promoting and then sort of bringing it back and looking at best practices from across the country, one of the things that we're looking to do is to do some, what I would say, informational employer summits. So we want to do 4 to 6 of them across the state. Right now we're looking tentatively of doing our first employer summit in the Bangor area sometime around the end of April. Right now we're just in the early planning stages. We're going to look at doing something in Aroostook County. We want to partner with each one of the HR chapters in doing this, bring employers in, try to offer some HCRI credits for HR people during that. It'll probably be a half-day event. But I think beginning to get that conversation started with businesses, get this, you know, higher up the pecking order on the radar, getting them to recognize that this is truly something important. It factors in very much with the conversation around workforce and skill gap and also the shortage of talent that a lot of businesses are talking about. And I think this is one of the tools that offer a solution.
When you're talking to employers, do they ever just flat out say, I'm sorry, we can't really do that?
No, I mean, so far, I mean, I'm sure that that will happen. But I've found that so far the conversations that I've been having since August have been very, very positive. In fact, more and more companies are beginning to sort of say, well, you know, who is this BLN? And you know, trying to connect with businesses that I had worked with in the past doing the workforce development stuff. And, you know, I mean, it's always great being on a show like this because you have a tremendous audience. It's connected with the HR community. That's always a great entree and a door in at many companies, probably most companies in Maine. So,
well, you know, I think, as I said before, the companies want to do the right thing. I say this all the time. You know, they want to do the right thing for the company. They want to do the right thing for the people. And so there is this delicate balance between the two, right? So that you have the bottom line, and the fact is that if you don't make a profit, you're out of business.
Right.
And then you can't help anybody. At the same time, you want to still take care of your people. You want to provide them great benefits. You want to provide reasonable accommodation. You want to provide them safety and well-being, all of the standard things that any employer would want to do. And 99.9% of all employers want to do that. So this fits right into that niche in saying, hey, is this one more way we can get great talent in? Because great talent is really all that matters at the end of the day. I've never had somebody go, no, I really want you to find me. I know you do recruiting, Dave, and I know you're out there. Could you just find me mediocre talent? Right. You know, just average talent. That's all I really want. I've never heard anybody say that. And rarely do they ever say, and it has to be, you know, a person who is perfect.
Right.
Because the reality is no one's perfect. And I think that this is one of those areas when you're looking at it from a blind perspective, if you just put the candidate on paper and you said, this is who they are and this is what they can do. And as long as they can articulate that and do what's necessary, it shouldn't even be a factor.
It's interesting. You know, I've had conversations with a lot of businesses around the state, and one that really has resonated with me and I really appreciate it was one I had with Chris Hopkins, the HR manager at J&S Oil. And if you've ever been into a J&S Oil station, and this is not a pitch for J&S Oil, but I travel a lot, so I love their stations. And when you go in, you are always greeted by a friendly person. And that's part of what they do. They hire a personality. So in the context of this, you know, he told me, we don't really care about the person other than the fact that we're hiring a personality. So for businesses like that, I mean, that's the perfect example of, you know, they're hiring a specific talent. And I really do think if nothing else, the message I'm trying to get across with the Maine BLN is this is a talent recruitment and retention tool. Nothing more, nothing less. I mean, we can make it more, and I don't want to oversimplify it, but this truly is a tool for a hiring manager's toolkit. And it can be a really beneficial tool that benefits their bottom line as a business.
Well, Jim, I appreciate you being in today. I think that this organization, the Maine Business Leadership Network, or Maine BLN, is an important new organization. As I said, just started in August with you as the new director. So congratulations again.
Thank you.
I appreciate you bringing this message and continue to get out there and talk about it, especially at the chambers. And I think that this will resonate.
Well, I appreciate you having me on your show, David. Thank you.
And now your HR tip of the week. What do recruiters really want to see on your LinkedIn profile? I think it's a great question, but let's talk about some of the things that are absolutely critical to make sure it's on there. You want to make sure that you state what is your true work history, especially the facts of what it is. You want to give a clear career story. You want to talk about your connections. A professional picture is critical. And you definitely want to make sure that it is clear and concise across all platforms so that your Facebook, your Twitter, and your LinkedIn all match. These are great ways to ensure that your social media presence matches for what exactly you're trying to look for in the marketplace. And that's your HR tip of the week. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be talking with national speaker Ken Gronbeck of KGC Direct. He is a demographer and will give a very interesting perspective on the powerful demographics of a shifting population and how it's going to affect hiring and your workplace. Thank you for listening and catch us every week at 2 p.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 AM or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.